Welcome to a brand new episode of the Internet's Most Hated Mafia-Themed Geek Podcast, the Long Coat Mafia Podcast. It is I, the Reverend Godfather, the show's main host and frontman. I know I told all of you last week we were starting our kind of a four-state Comic-Con retrospective type of series, and we're still going to do that. We started last week, so if you missed that episode in any way, shape, or form, please go back and download it and give it a listen, because it was put together with love for Four State Comic Con. And for all of you new listeners out there that might not have heard those interviews before. But because of recent events and everything else, there was one person kind of reached out to a lot of podcasters that might have been following her, and she said, I want to talk about being an actress and doing, you know, tarot. And I said, sure. And this actress is the one, the only, Genoveva Rossi. And Miss Rossi, if you're listening, I hope I pronounced your name correctly. I am trying. So please forgive me. And some of you folks who've been listening to us since the very beginning might remember Miss Rossi from our very first con coverage way back in, I think, October, maybe November 2015. We interviewed Miss Rossi for the Four State Slasher Con, and during that time, we were very green, as you'll hear in our call with Miss Rossi, and the episode with her interview was not the best. It was kind of very noisy. So it was good having her back on the show. And since then, she is now a award-winning actress, and amongst many other things. And she wanted to come on the show to talk about being an actress and doing tarot readings and a little bit more. So sure as heck, I said yes. And Miss Rossi, it was wonderful to have you on the show. And as always, since this is a Skype call, I must tell all of you I'm going to be sounding weird in it, as always. And there seems to be a little bit of a pop or a click that kind of came through somehow. I think it was because both of us were drinking beverages, because it was like 10 o'clock in the morning. So, and it could be just that. I don't know how to get rid of them with the editing software that I have. But again, because it's Skype, it's, you know, the only editing I did was kind of cut down the dropped sections of the call and kind of boosted my voice a little bit, because sometimes when I record something through Skype, voice meter kind of lowers my voice a little bit, and it comes very low sometimes. Even though you were able to hear me just fine, about out of a 10 scale volume, maybe fine, I was fine at a 5, but at times you might have had to increase that to maybe to a 7 level. So I kind of just boosted me across the board, so you don't really have to do that and keep it at a 5. So that's about the only thing you'll notice in this. Miss Rossi came in very well. And again, this is a Skype call with Miss Genoveva Rossi, and I hope you enjoy it, and I'll see all of you at the end of this call, which will start now. All right, folks, as stated, we're here with the award-winning actress. And not just to talk about her acting career, but to talk about what she's into as well. Miss Genoveva Rossi, I hope I'm pronouncing that right. But for
that was pretty good, Genoveva Rossi. Yes, you got it. You got it. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. And again, I'm happy to have you back on the show, this time with way better audio than it was more than, I want to say, close to 5 years ago. So
Was it that long ago? I think we did it at a convention, wasn't it?
Yes, it was, I think, October, November 2015. We were, as a show, very green back then. Very, very green. So, and we were happy to get any interviews, so we thank you very much for that.
Well, is it that, like, the Martinsville Horror Fest or something like that?
Yeah, it was the four-state SlasherCon in Winchester, Virginia.
That's what it was. Okay. It's all blur in my mind.
The past four and a half years for us have been a blur as well. And it's like, we've done what? Especially now since we're kind of doing a four-state Comic-Con retrospective series, and it amazes me that we have so much content to share with new listeners, and it's another great reason to have you back on, because during this time, no one might know that you were on the show, and kind of, I'm not going to rehash any questions or anything like that, but I'm going to allow you to talk about your acting career. When did you get started acting?
Well, it was something I was always interested in, with being in school plays and things like that when I was a kid. I think my first play was nursery school. I was a ladybug in that one. We were all insects, in fact, as I recall. That was my first one, nursery school. And then I was in a couple in grammar school and things like that. And then a while off, actually in college, I was in a couple short films that some kids were working on in college. And then afterwards, Jen Valdez and her sister Marissa asked me if I wanted to be in a movie called Jacko Slasher, where I would be playing a sexy Satanist in a cornfield. And I was like, all right. So I went out to Long Island, and I was in a cornfield, and I was a sexy Satanist wearing a lot of makeup and stuff. I didn't realize, of course, when I agreed to do this, that it was going to be like 20 degrees or 30 degrees, and we'd be in the cornfield at like 2 o'clock in the morning. But that is the non-glamorous world of acting, you know, being freezing outside, not wearing a lot of clothes, covered in fake blood. That's acting.
So this is where you were kind of, could you say you were drawn into the independent movie scene, or what? Or should I say, do you prefer the independent, because of this, do you prefer the independent movie scene versus the more mainstream aspect of things?
Well, I guess I'm open to either, more mainstream and higher budget versus lower budget. Like I, in October of this year, actually last year, of course, 2019, I was I was like a zombie for a few days in Army of the Dead, which is a Netflix movie. And I think the budget for that was like $70 million. So I don't have a problem with being on the $70 million movie versus a movie that, you know, is a very low budget movie. You know, either way, everybody was super duper nice on the Army.
I'm going to have to interrupt you. You kind of dropped out for a moment.
Oh, okay.
You were explaining about the, all of a sudden, about being in a $70 million movie, and all of a sudden it just dropped out. I blame Skype, not your fault.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
So, what were you saying?
Well, let me know.
No, I'm just saying, what were you saying in regards to the being in a $70 million movie as, I won't say an extra, I don't want to put you down like that.
Well, I guess like a featured zombie or something like that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Zombie.
So, and Mike almost fell over. Sorry about that. Being in these, I should say, which has been more fun, the independent or the mainstream?
Well, they've both been fun. I guess it depends on the film, you know. And then, you know, mainstream versus independent. Sometimes independent films do have a pretty decent budget. You know, we do have some independent films that are a couple hundred thousand dollars, a few million dollars. So sometimes they get a little bit more mainstream and a little bit more, higher production value. But a lot of times in the end, I think it depends on the director, the team you're working with, and the story is really, you know, the most important thing.
I think that's what amuses me as well, is that I hear folks saying, yeah, I'm in a low-budget movie or something along those lines, or I work in low-budget films, and you ask them, it's like, oh, what's your classification of low-budget? Oh, $1 million or $2 million or something like that, and yet me being the kind of person I am, is like, wait a minute. Yeah, basically, with how things are nowadays, that is low budget, but I'm thinking maybe $35,000, $40,000 or less, or maybe if someone has that type of money, $100,000 or less. So it's kind of amusing to hear that. So I guess that's why also when you hear Lloyd Kaufman say that, oh yeah, I'm the king of independent, yeah, he probably started that low, but he's gotten so well known in the industry.
Oh yeah, and I was in Shakespeare's Storm. I had a very small part a couple summers ago when we shot that, and he shot that red camera, and he definitely brings some quality to what he's doing. So he's low budget, but not really that low budget,
right?
You know, because it's a big range when the B-rated genre, because B-rated could be your movie is still B-rated at a couple million dollars. It's still rated at $500,000. You know, I don't know at what point we become an A-rated movie. Definitely when you're in the Zack Snyder Army of the Dead and our budget's $70 million, we're out of the B-rated. You know, because $70 million is a lot of movie. That's like how much money they spent on like a lot of like movies that have a theatrical release and stuff, like the new Harlequin movie and whatever, you know, was probably around $70 million. Like that's a pretty big mainstream budget. But, you know, $5 million is pretty low budget by today, you know, compared to Hollywood, you know, $2 million. That's pretty low.
Yeah, that's why I have a little bit of respect for someone. Granted, he's a well-known A-list director. It's like Robert Rodriguez. He's worked on a lot of low budget films, so when he's given a larger budget film, he knows how to stretch every penny and get his money's worth. So when I hear someone like that, or see someone or an actor such as like Danny Trejo always helping the lower budget, the independent folks and student creators trying to get their name out and a leg up, it's always a great to hear something like that.
Well, you know what? In some actors, like one of my favorites, William Dafoe, he does some indie films that are kind of low budget. And you know why he does that? Because, you know, he's an artist. And if he reads a script and he thinks it's a good character and it's a good script and it's something that he needs to do as an artist, he's going to do it regardless of the budget.
Yeah, and you have a lot of actors and actresses that really know how to sell their role, no matter who or what the film is. And that's always great to hear, and it's sad that sometimes, I know you get parts that you want to get parts for, but it's sad to see that it's like, to hear that you have a part in this movie, or part in that movie, and it's like, okay, I could watch it on Netflix, and it's like, okay, it's, let's play Where's Miss Rossi? It's Where's Waldo? And I don't mean it to knock you, but sometimes it's kind of hard to spot where you are. It's fun, but it's kind of hard to, if you're in like a background character. I think it was a movie that came out maybe 2 years ago, maybe 3 years ago. You were, I think, on IMDb, you were listed as a nurse or something like that. It was like
Death House.
Yeah, that's it. And
yeah.
And it's like, I gotta go back and rewatch it. It was a very interesting film, and I think.
Well, just to clarification on Death House, I was cast in that movie less than 24 hours before I shot my scene.
Wow.
Yes, that was very spur of the moment. They were looking for people to shoot in Philadelphia like the next day. It was like on a Wednesday. They're looking for people. I was emailing with them, and then they had me come out to play a nurse. I pop up a couple times in a scene with Dee Schneider. I might be a little bit hard to recognize because they darkened my hair that day, and it's up in a bun, and I'm wearing like a long white like lab coat, so I look a little bit different than I normally look.
Yeah, I said the film. It was,
I think I'm carrying a clipboard.
It was like, I gotta watch this, and it had a lot of big name folks in it, including what's his name? I'm pulling it up. Folks, I hate doing this.
Dee Schneider, Barbara Crampton, and Kane Hodder are really like the leads, I would say.
They were leads, and it also had as a like an extra. Now I want to say extra, like a lead in. They mm-hmm. had Tony Todd.
Exactly. Yep.
And mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. what amazed me was like I was because he was such an he puts 110% in his roles. He's mm-hmm. very underrated. And the thing is, I was like very, I wouldn't say attached to his roles. Like, I want to know more about this guy. Who is this guy? And that's to his credit that he's putting his heart and soul into the role. It's like, I want to know more about this dude's backstory. Who is he?
But I do want to say that I'm not like a professional extra, and it's not like most of the movies that I'm in. I'm only in for like a second. Over like 102 movies, and some of them I have larger parts than others. Right. Like some I would be a character role where I pop up for a couple scenes, or some of them I just have a cameo where I might have a quick speaking scene or something like that. And then some of them I'd be supporting cast or starring. They all vary.
Right.
There's over 102 of them, probably well over 102. So, you know, they all vary in the size of the role.
I do not mean to knock what you do in any way, shape, or form.
And so, then Death House, you know, I have a small part in that, but you know what? If it's a paid gig and you want me to come out, you know, I'm a professional actor and I like to make money. So even if it's a small part, if you're paying me, I'll be there. It's a job.
Right.
I pay my bills with this. So, you know, people are like, well, why bother being in a part that's so small? Because they paid me. That's why I'm there. I'm a professional actor. Also, my manager, Matt Chasen, a lot of times he gives input on what he wants me to do. A lot of his actors were in Death House, in small parts and big parts. And that was an interesting movie, Death House. Death House is almost like the Where's Waldo of horror movies, because when you watch that movie, you have like a list of everyone you know that's in it. And then the trick is to find them all, because like I pop up for a second, Tiffany Shepis pops up for a second, Jan Birch pops up for like a second, Tony Moran pops up for like a quick minute maybe, Camille Keaton pops up for one quick scene. It's almost like you can make a drinking game out of it, you know, like so many people pop up really briefly and it's so easy to miss them. If you're not really paying attention, because it is kind of a dark movie and it is very fast-paced.
Right, and that's what's great about folks like yourself, and I, again, not meaning to knock you in any way, shape, or form, when you have a movie such as that, it's like, wait, Kane Hodder's in this? Wait, Tony Todd's in this? Wait, Miss Rossi's? And you just want to see where all these people are, and it becomes not just, granted, like you said, it's a dark movie, it becomes a little bit more fun to see where each person is, what their role is, how their role worked in the movie. It makes it more interesting. It draws more of a fan base into that particular movie.
And I think that's what was their intention, is that they filled all the roles with notable actors, whether it was a speaking role or it was a featured extra, like cameo role. Like everybody pretty much in that movie from beginning to end is somebody. So you can kind of go through that movie and just pick out all these people. Like the voice of the computer is Adrian Bardot, you know, like, and you might not realize that when you first watch it. There's like all these different layers to it because of all the different names that are like kind of that pop up, even if it's only just very briefly in the movie. It's kind of interesting.
Briefly, I want to say this. I know you brought it up a couple of times, is the aspect of women in primary roles and female directors and writers and so forth and so on. And I want to say, at least I agree with you on that. A lot of women are very underrated, and especially in, I want to say in this time, it's just that sometimes we forget a lot. There's a whole history of a lot of great women that have done strong roles and big names in that aspect. I know you shared the list of a lot of women that most people do not realize participated in either big shows or big movies, and they just completely kind of forgot about.
Well, I know I was reading an article a while ago, and I sent it even to Lloyd Kaufman. They were saying, I think in the last 10 years or so, the size of women's parts in films hasn't really gone up. and that we still are making movies that have a male Caucasian narrative more than anything else. And people that are women and also minorities are very underrepresented in film. And the best thing we can do is we need more women and minority producers, directors, writers, because they'll write and create stories that have more women and minorities in them. You know, I'm actually directing a feature film at the moment that's been taking a while, but all these indie films do take a while, called Attack of the Killer Chickens, the movie, and I'm the writer, director, and star, and, you know, I have an incredibly diverse cast. We have, you know, white men in the movie, certainly, but we also have, you know, African-American, female, Hispanic. I have a couple senior citizens in the movie. I have, I think, one transgender. I Asian, African American. I'm trying to think what other groups. I think we pretty much covered every minority.
Yeah, I think that was one of the articles you posted up. I think a few years ago, something like that, in regards to there are a lot of women like yourself doing independent stuff, and a lot of, even though those spotlights in the mainstream aspect, I think we have to look at a lot of the indie stuff too, that there are women like yourself in the indie circuit that are not getting the credit that they should as well.
Well, that may be true. I don't know. But me personally, I feel like I haven't been doing too bad in that recognition department, so I don't want to be too critical. Because my first short film that I directed was Attack of the Killer Chickens, that's turning into a feature now. And Attack of the Killer Chickens, the short film that began my journey, and the first film I directed, I think received at least 6 awards, which I think is pretty much unusual. So it got 2 acting awards for Best Actress and Best Supporting Actress from from a horror film festival called Fantastic Horror Film Festival. Also at that film festival, it won Best Short Film, it won Best Comedy, and then what else? And then it also won at Action on Film Best Spoof. And then just in February, at another film festival, the short film actually won Best Grindhouse Film at the Anti-Hero Production Genre Festival. So I think it's probably one of the most award-winning short films that anyone directed their first time out. Still counts. I can't say I haven't gotten recognition.
Still counts. Still counts. At least you could walk into a place and say, hey, I am an award-winning actress and writer.
And director.
And director.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I have a whole bunch of awards. I have at least 3 acting awards, and then I have a few for my writing and my directing as well. I think if you look on my IMDb, I have like maybe 7 or something like that total. So, yeah, for my first short film, that it's won as many awards as it has, I think is great. And that we're turning into a feature film is great. So I feel like I have gotten a decent amount of recognition as a woman in horror and things like that. But I guess we just, you know, part of it is maybe some women just don't put themselves out there and don't want to direct as much. Sometimes people of different groups not being represented in certain areas is sometimes a lack of interest. A lot of women want to be actresses. Not everybody wants to be a director. But I think more women should, you know, a lot of times you could become a director in order to become an actor, like Sylvester Stallone did with Rocky. Like, you know, he wrote that so that he could then star in it. Or like A Quiet Place, you know, the lead actor is also the writer and the director.
Yeah, that's a great movie. To see someone who worked small time to become a more of a bigger, predominant person in the industry. So it's, would you consider it great advice for anybody coming into or wanting to be an actor or director to start low, cut their teeth on something that's indie or low budget first, then try to work their way up? That way they have at least that experience.
Well, I would say all experience is good experience. I think when you're starting out, any opportunity that you have to act is a good opportunity, whether it's community theater or going on auditions or doing extra work or doing indie films. You probably want to do everything and anything that you can do to get yourself.
Okay. It just dropped out for a second. So that's all right. The majority was there. I think your point did come through.
Yeah, you want to do anything and everything that you can to get yourself actor as an actor. Right. You know, auditions, community theater, indie films, extra work. Anything that you can do to get yourself out there and get yourself some experience and get some bullet points on your resume, you know?
As always, for those, before we continue, if you don't mind continuing to what we'll also talk, or you wish to talk about the tarot aspect of things, what advice do you have to the folks, especially the young women, the girls coming into the industry? What advice do you have to say to them that they should know, as someone who's been doing this for quite a while?
Well, I would say be very careful of Harvey Weinstein type people.
Of course.
And, you know, for that, yeah, that I would be very cautious of. I think you have to be very cautious going in. A lot of times that's why you want to have a manager and you want to have representation, because it's good to have somebody to guide you along the way, to make sure that you don't make mistakes in who you hang out with and who you put your trust in. Because not just from a sexual standpoint, but you have to be very careful from a financial standpoint. There's a lot of people out there trying to rip you off. You know, even Elton John got ripped off by people in the industry. Nicolas Cage, you know, huge names have been ripped off. So it could really happen to anyone. So you want to make sure you have somebody to guide you that's really trustworthy. So I would think, you know, those are things to be cautious of, I would think, early on. Mm-hmm.
And would you say trust your instincts as well? If you figure that something is not right, just say no, you know, and back out.
Well, I trust your instincts. You know, I guess it depends on the person and their instincts. You know, I don't know. I have no the individual whether or not they should be trusting their instincts. Like, if the person's really paranoid and has an anxiety condition, I don't know if they should trust their instincts. Well, I guess it depends on the person. Yeah. But if you don't think things are right, I think a lot of times you need to do a lot of research on people and organizations. A lot of times I do Google searches and I look people and places up and companies to make sure they have a good reputation. Maybe I ask for references. And you can always ask for somebody for references.
Yeah. And also with a lot of the Facebook groups out there, you'd always check with the group to see if the person or film company is on the up and up and has a decent reputation, I guess, as well.
Yeah, like you would do for any other job, really. You probably just want to tackle this like you would any other job. And that's probably the big mistake that we make, is we don't see the film industry as we do other jobs. Like, if you've worked in corporate America, you know, sexual harassment is in your employee handbook. And then, you know, and before you take a job or work for a company, you usually do a background check and check the references. And that, so those same rules should apply in the film industry, because you know what show business is a business,
right?
And we should actually treat it like any other business in some regards, and bring that same level of professionalism into it that we bring. You know, if you owned any other kind, like if I owned a magazine company, I'll bring those same basic principles, you know, into it. A business is a business, and we should be running it like that, you know.
And before we go into the next topic, is there any movie or production you wish the audience to keep an eye out for that you're in?
Well, I'm working on like a few things right now, like Attack of the Killer Chickens, the movie, which will probably be out. I was hoping for this year, but with everything going on in the world, it's looking like maybe the beginning of next year, because of everything going on in the world is probably delaying everything. I'm working on upcoming film. I can't talk too much about that, but it does star Kane Hodder and Bill Moseley and some really and Michael Berryman and such. So I'm really excited to be part of that, but I'm not allowed to discuss too much about it.
No problem.
You know, everybody follow me online, GenevievaRossi.com, and keep up on my social media on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter, and I'll be announcing things. Also, a short film that I did a while ago that'll be coming out probably in a bit, called Pumpkin Seeds, where I play a woman from the 1970s, and kind of like a Halloween short film. Let's see what else. Oh, and I just did a movie very recently with Randy Jones from The Village People called The Cannibal Killer, this true story of Jeffrey Dahmer. So that was a pretty cool movie. We shot that actually in New Jersey. With Peter Jacqueline was the director of that one. So that was a pretty cool film to do.
I think I saw that on your one of your, if not your fan pages and your main page as well.
Yeah, we did that fairly recently. Now it's going to the film festival circuit. So that's a pretty cool one, and I had a fun time doing that. I have, like, a small character role in that. Like, I have, like, kind of like a long, heavily dialogue-driven scene with Randy Jones and Jeffrey Dahmer in that. So that's a pretty cool movie, you know, with that. And then I enjoy doing that, and I enjoy going out to the premiere and stuff. What else? And then then, yeah, I have a bunch of film projects coming up, you know, fairly soon. I worked on Adam Albrandt's film Betrayer a while ago with Jason Vail from Atlanta, Georgia, and a bunch of other films along those lines. So, yeah, keeping myself pretty occupied. I usually shoot something about every month. Mm-hmm.
And as always, even though we're going to probably reiterate that at the end of the show, but when these projects come out and they're officially released and you share them on social media, we'll be happy to share them on our page as well as post links to your fan pages and your website in our show description. So that way, if fans wish to follow you on social media, they'll be able to do so. So.
Exactly. And then I'm a featured zombie in the Zack Snyder's return to filmmaking Army of the Dead that we filmed in October in Atlantic City. So that was kind of an interesting film. Army of the Dead, Zack Snyder's the director, and I was on set a few days as like a featured zombie. Probably, you know, some days I wasn't that heavily made up as a zombie, so I'm probably somewhat recognizable. You know, other days I was more heavily made up, so other days I wouldn't be recognizable at all because I pretty much have a lot of latex over my face. But it was pretty amazing to be part of a $70 million horror movie, though, because it's like here they are. They literally spent hours on her makeup every day, so
and it was a process. For fans of either horror or whatever you've been into to check you out because it does support the film industry, especially during this time. It's more so than ever.
Yes. And then we do realize during this time how important film and TV is because that's what a lot of us are relying on to keep ourselves amused and help the time go by more pleasantly and more quickly. You know, I posted on my Facebook recently. I have a number of films that are on Amazon.com right now. What am I saying? Amazon? Yeah, Amazon, yeah. Prime. Like Jacko Slasher, Bible Belt Slasher Part 2. I'm in Not Another Bad Horror Movie. I'm in one called Bigfoot that I really like. Herschel Gordon Lewis's Blood Mania was a really cool one that I'm in. I Spill Your Guts is on there. A Dark Place Inside. Hunters. I think I have like over like 30 movies that I've been in that are on Amazon Prime.
Which is, folks at home, if you have an Amazon Prime account or if you have access to the app, feel free to check out Ms. Rossi's film career. It helps support her and those who make the movies as well. So, to kind of move on to the next topic, you want to talk about tarot and being a someone who does tarot readings. Can you explain to the folks at home a little bit about tarot? I'm sure I'm mispronouncing it as well.
Tarot is basically an ancient, probably been around for about 7,000 years. It's a tradition of fortune telling using a deck of cards. There's 78 cards in the deck, typically. Major and minor arcana, typically. Not always true, but usually, and very similar to a playing deck of cards that maybe you would use for poker, but kind of not in some ways too. So tarot has been around for 7,000 years. It actually predates most of the world's religions as we know them now, including Christianity. So a lot of people try to attribute it to different religions and stuff, but you kind of can't because it actually predates them. And you know, and where has tarot began? Where did it begin? Some people think ancient Italy. Some people think that the Gypsy or the Roma people were the first ones that were using tarot cards, and that because they're a nomadic people that I have a huge amount of respect for, that travel from place to place, that they actually brought the tarot reading with them and kind of exposed everybody to it. So that's a possibility. I've been reading tarot since I was in high school. I do that professionally. I go all over the country reading for parties and private events and things like that. No, it's something that I definitely enjoy doing. And what do we do with tarot? A good tarot reading informs you of the past and the present and advises you on the future.
Now, I was going to ask you, and it was going to come out wrong. I was going to be like, what makes you an expert? And you kindly answered that you do this professionally. Now, I've heard, as someone who doesn't know about tarot in any way, shape, or form, I've heard there's like 3 decks, 4 decks. Every time I ask somebody that is like, oh, I do tarot, I get like a different answer. So can you kind of still clarify how many decks are there?
How many decks are there?
Yeah, I've heard like various people saying, oh, there's 3 decks, there's 4 decks, but yet there's some people that say
in the world, how many decks of tarot cards are there?
No, there's like varieties of decks.
Well, there's probably thousands, because everybody comes up with their own deck. Like, I just went to a New Age festival, like a month or so ago, and somebody had their deck that they made up themselves that they were selling for $40. I could come up with my own deck if I wanted to. There's like an infinite amount of decks out there. I own at least 12 or 20 decks just myself in my apartment as part of my collection.
Wow.
Italian deck, I have Aleister Crowley's Thoth. I have like a Halloween deck. I have the Deviant Moon deck. I have the Rider-Waite deck. I have the Spiral deck. I have many, many decks.
Basically the same thing, or follow the same basic principle?
Some yes and some do. Some yes and some don't. No. So there are usually things that we attribute as being normal parts of it. And there are some decks that break all the rules. Like, I have one that's the Italian Arcadia deck that I bought a while ago. And that's a tarot deck that's completely different than any other tarot deck I've ever used. I also have another one that's modeled after Napoleon's Oracle deck. It's French. And that one is unlike any other deck I've ever used. So there's a basic system that most tarot decks follow, but not all of them do. And I have tarot decks that follow the basic system, but then I also have decks that don't, that are completely different.
So it all depends on what the situation you're going to be going into. It's like, okay, this is going to be strictly, maybe, let's say, if you're doing vending or doing a reading at a medieval event, you'd have the basic deck. If you wanted to do a reading at maybe, let's say, a horror show, you'd bring a horror deck because that's more of a theme.
I don't know if I have any horror decks, but yeah, like I have like Matt Burns, I think, got me one that's like a Justice League tarot deck for when I'm doing a comic book show. Because they're all comic book characters on a tarot deck. And then I do a Halloween tarot deck that's themed for Halloween when it's Halloween. I have different decks depending on different moods. Usually whenever I do professional readings at an event, I usually bring 3 decks with me.
And what's the process? Again, this is just me hearing things from like very different people that might not be professional like yourself. Like one person told me, it's like, yes, told me you can't shuffle it, but you can touch the deck. Other people have said you can't touch the deck at all. What's the basic process of what goes on during a reading?
So who can't touch the deck? Because if nobody touched the desk, how would we do a reading?
No, I mean the person who does the reading is the only one that can touch the deck. The person who is getting the reading can't touch the deck.
That depends on your own style. Everybody does it differently.
Okay. So it is, again, as a variety of the decks that are out there, there's a variety of styles of way of doing it.
Oh, yeah, for sure, for sure. And then I also forgot I got another deck. I have a Voodoo Tarot deck, too, that I got in New Orleans a few years ago, too. So, like, you have to keep in mind, too, that a lot of the decks that I have go into different systems. Like, some of them go into Kabbalah. Some of them go into Voodoo, like the one deck I have. Some of them are more, like, angel-oriented. Some of them are kind of pagan, you know. So a lot of times the tarot is kind of blending into other religions and cultures and might start adopting the rules of that culture,
so,
or that religion or that discipline.
With that aspect, if you had that Voodoo deck, the Kabbalah deck, and the Angelic deck in front of you, a person could, in essence, get basically three different readings, if I may, from those decks.
Well, possibly. You know, usually when I do a professional reading out somewhere, I bring in three different decks and I use those three decks during the reading. And sometimes you'll find that all three decks will say pretty much the same thing.
Very interesting. I'm trying to be an open-minded skeptic in this. Please forgive me for doing so. With that, has a lot of things... How are things interpreted by the person that is getting the reading? Has it been accurate? Has it not been accurate? What's the usual?
Well,
outcome?
Obviously, if I've been doing this since I was in high school and I'm still doing it now, it must be pretty accurate.
So I'm coming from a novice aspect of things. I'm trying to be the skeptic in this a little bit as well. So I don't mean to insult you in any way. I'm just trying to be the other side of things, and I don't want to tear you apart in any way, shape, or form. It's me trying to ask questions to get an understanding of this, because it depends on the person.
Have you ever gotten a reading yourself professionally? Maybe that would give you a better sense of things if you actually went for a reading yourself.
Oh, I think once.
Okay.
Many years ago, and I think,
yeah, because if you're that curious about it, that's probably something that you need to do. Is that you need to maybe experience it, because right now we're talking about something and it's not. It doesn't seem like right. It's tangible in your mind.
I think the person that did it, I think it was maybe about 10 years ago, was a professional, and at that time I thought, you know, nothing of it, and I posted up on my Facebook page, my personal Facebook page, old Stephen Wright joke. Yeah, I just got a professional tower reading. It came up as a royal flush, 50 people died. So I just dismissed it as a joke.
Oh, yeah, I think I remember that joke. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and people kind of, it's like, oh, that's not how it is. I'm like, I'm not really, I took it as entertainment value flat out. I'm not really into that. I'm, you know, I don't know how to take it. And there was a friend of mine that said, yeah, I'm getting into tarot. I know all about one of those type of folks that, yeah, I know all about it. I'm getting into it. And let me do a reading. And it just was very vague. And it could have, there was a lot, it was more of like a horoscope is, that it was very vague and could apply to just about anybody.
Well, every reader is going to be different, and different things are going to come up in a reading and whatever. It all depends on the reading that you do with the person. Now, in addition to doing tarot, I also do palm reading. I do tea leaf reading. I do crystal ball gazing. What else do I do? I also was doing lip readings a while ago. I did that actually at Macy's. I did lip readings.
Now, again, I have to ask about that, because when a lot of folks, because it's the first thought that came across my mind in regards to lip readings, most people think, like, isn't that something that who is hearing impaired does? But so please explain that a little bit.
Well, what a lot of people don't realize is that there is a form of divination for everything, really. Like, some people actually do the mounds or the head, where they actually feel your head and do a reading from that. Some people use the palms and a lip reading. To do lip readings as a form of divination is to actually, like, to be looking at someone's lips, and based on the shape of the lips and the way that the lips form, to tell the person things about their personality, maybe about their destiny, about their future, and things like that.
So it's similar to kind of how palm reading is with the long.
Exactly. Or reading the mounds of the head. Yeah. You know, people do all different kinds of things for readings that you don't even realize that they do. Like it used to be very popular, like 100 or so years ago, to read the mounds on someone's head, and you'd have somebody sit down and you put your hands into their hair and you would just feel up their scalp and you would do a reading based on their scalp. And that was something that was very popular for many years, and for whatever reason, people aren't into it anymore. But palm reading has always been very popular, and then lip reading has become popular once again, even though it's been around for like a really long time. And there are probably a lot of things that you can use to get a reading off of somebody. A lot of things about ourselves, probably like our eyes or lips or our scalps or hands, a lot, you know, maybe even our feet could probably denote a lot of things about our destiny and our lives if they're red, you know.
Again, this was a while ago, an article, I think it was shortly after the first Kill Bill came out, that... Mm-hmm. In the movie, for the folks who haven't seen it, it's a very good good movie that shows a strong woman. But what happens is the main character awakes from a coma, and the first thing she does is look at her hands to see how far time has passed. And so she gets an idea, and people said, yeah, that's a good scientific method, in a way, to see how far time has passed by looking at the lines in your hands. So there might be some scientific proof or basis for at least palm reading.
Well, I guess your palms is almost like, it's almost like, you know, when you have like a tree, like a redwood tree in the forest, and you cut it down and then you could read the rings. And the rings will tell you, you know, when the tree went through like a drought, and when it was maybe survived a fire. And that's all in the rings of the tree, and that's scientific. Right. So maybe our palms are much like our rings that a tree would have, and that it kind of denotes like the passage of time and what we've gone through.
I guess the way the article is stating in regards to, if you want to apply it to palm readings, like, yeah, in a way that it might have started as, I know they were probably saying like, this weird taboo or quasi thing out there, but it kind of leads to science, like where, someone could look at somebody's palm and say, you've been through this, you've been through that, been through X, Y, and Z in your past. Yeah, it's a way of, there is some sort of scientific aspect by looking at somebody's hands or in some cases their feet that, well, there is some science to there, or there's some, can be some science taken out of it.
Well, a lot of things that we thought of in the past as being magic eventually have become science.
Correct.
You know, and that's very true. A lot of people don't realize too is that when tarot cards were first developed, they were studied by mathematicians because they actually believed that the tarot contained the secrets to the universe. So scientists were actually the first ones to study the tarot. And then I remember when I took my psychology classes in college, my psychology teacher said the first psychologists were the fortune tellers.
Because especially if someone could read body language and how a person's coming off, they could tell a lot about somebody.
Well, that's, I guess, part of it, and that's your interpretation. But also they were the first people to counsel people on their problems.
True.
You know what I'm saying? That's what a tarot card reader does. That's what a fortune teller does. More than anything else, you are a spiritual counselor.
And because here at the show we're traditional ADHD folks, one of the things I heard about tarot is that some people are able to do it with I know you brought it up earlier, like with a regular deck of playing cards. Is that true, or?
Well, it's not tarot at that point. Then you're using a tarot is actually a specific kind of deck.
Right. Okay.
But you can definitely fortune tell using a regular playing deck, and people do it. Absolutely. Okay. You know, it's not so much. See, you're spending too much time thinking about the tools. All of these things are just tools that some people use in order to kind of channel their psychic ability, and some people don't use any tools at all.
This is one of the reasons why I love having you back on. I wanted you to be back on the show to help clarify things and kind of, I wouldn't say educate, but inform folks more so in regards to about tarot, and kind of feel the older listeners who might have heard your first being on the show, and kind of get them filled in regards to what's been happening with your career and this aspect with the tarot.
Well, yeah, that's why you don't want to get too hung up on the different decks and, you know, who touches the cards and who does this and who does that. Because in the end, it's really about the reader and the reader's ability. And all of these things, whether it's a crystal ball or it's tarot cards or whatever, are just an instrument of your psychic ability. And some people don't use any of that. There are some people. And I've done this actually for readings too, where sometimes you just hold somebody's hands and you close your eyes and you just say the first thing that pops into your mind, and you don't use any tools at all, because none of these tools are even required, really.
As someone like myself that might see, I again, not knocking what you do and how you do it or this whole aspect, what about the folks that just see this as maybe a curiosity, or like, they're doing it for fits and giggles and just plain entertainment?
Well, I guess there's an entertainment aspect to everything. Like, some people just probably go to church for entertainment too. You know, I guess you're allowed to do that, you know? Right? I imagine some people just go, you know, because like church, you know, can be very deeply spiritual for you. Or maybe you just like to go because you like to see the minister speak and you like to hear the music. I guess it's up to you in the end why you do things, you know. You know, I can't say that that's wrong that you do something for entertainment value. I guess as long as you're getting enjoyment from it at the end of the day, that's what matters.
Meaning it's like, hey, I'm not really, well, like I said, it's like maybe 10 years ago someone was doing free readings, like, you know what, why not, you know? It's just for fits and giggles, and there's no harm, no foul in it. If something comes out of it, whatever. So it's not, most people might do it just for that. Hey, what the hell? It's
purely, and every reader is different, because I've gone for readings with different people, and I would say, to be honest, I've gotten readers from people I thought were con artists, and I've gotten readings from people that I thought were very good and very genuine in what they did. Readers are much like people, that you get bad ones and you get good ones, and you get some people you can't trust and some people that are phenomenal.
Yeah, I
guess. And you can't judge everybody based on like one person.
I guess, you know, if there's that draw, again, that draw that somebody has to keeps going back, it's like, oh, dude, you got to get a reading from this person. It's, you know, how they present themselves, how they do this is purely awesome or great. And whether it reveals something for that person or not, they go back because they're either A, entertained, or they're getting something out of that person somehow.
Well, you know, a lot of people, you may not realize this, and I don't want to get too political, but a lot of people probably don't realize this, but it's a fact that pretty much every world leader has an oracle or reader. And that goes all the way back to Queen Elizabeth I, who was advised on battling the Spanish Armada. Napoleon had an oracle, and that's a fact. And then we bring ourselves all the way back to more modern times. Ronald Reagan had an astrologer who advised him on his presidency. I know for a fact that Donald Trump has psychics that he sees regularly. I'm sure probably every leader of every country, you know, does. You know, they have somebody that they consult. I met one woman, she was even telling me, she was a reader, and I think she used to consult people, you know, in organized crime. You know, people were some of her clients. I'm at another reader that I worked with that I actually hired, and he used to advise the police department whenever they had a crime or a missing person and they didn't have any clues. They would go to this individual and he would start drawing cards and try to give them some input on some possibilities of finding missing people or for finding a murderer or a criminal that was at large. And he consulted the police department for many years. So there must be something to this for right. some people that, you know, otherwise the police department wouldn't be paying you.
Right. Or you might have, again, to be kind of the skeptic advocate in this, the odds of them being correct are probably more, or I should say higher than others in order for those people, those organizations or those people to keep going back to that particular person.
Well, obviously you're going to go back to somebody that has a very, you know, high rate of being accurate, because they do actually, you know, they test psychics and things like that, you know, and you can tell things like me personally, I do a lot of readings and things like that. But then I also, throughout my life, I've had a lot of dreams and premonitions. I was having a couple of dreams about our current situation in the world right now a couple months ago. And I was warning all my friends about what's going on now a couple months ago, that it was going to turn into what it is now. And everybody thought I was overreacting. But I was having dreams and I was having feelings. And I've had a lot of things like that with people dying and things happening throughout my life, you know. So when I'm using the tarot cards and I'm using the palm reading, those are just instruments that I'm using. But a lot of times it's my dreams that also guide me and have premonitions, you know, like, you know, a lot of things in my life were foreshadowed by a dream. You know, before all this happened with what's going on in the world right now, I had a dream a couple months ago that there was like kind of like a zombie outbreak, and that we had to cancel a parade. And then all this came out the weekend of St. Patrick's Day. What?
I don't mean to kid you or anything. Like, I think a lot of folks, it's not you, it's like you hear a lot of folks, especially I'm sure you've seen on Facebook, a lot of people right now are kind of hoping for that zombie outbreak. But again, not to knock you in any way, shape, or form. It's something that
they're hoping for a zombie outbreak?
Yeah, some people, it's like, I've been seeing the memes out there, it's like, what I wanted is like a zombie outbreak, but now we're getting to stay inside. It's that sort of thing.
Oh, no, I just think it was like that was just my dream was like kind of paralleling this to like a virus or something like that, you know. It was like symbolic.
Symbolic and taking it to the...
Not a literal thing, thing. Yeah, I would never want a zombie outbreak. I think that would be like the worst thing ever. Doesn't anyone ever watch these zombie movies? They never end well, like Night of the Living Dead. That didn't have a happy ending.
No. I think dreams do take things maybe a little exaggerated. It's like the fisherman, I caught a 3-foot fish, and yet only it was like a foot and a half or something like that.
Well, dreams a lot of times have a lot of symbolism, and they're not to be taken literally.
Right.
And you have to think about that. You know, so my dream was like, you know, there's zombies and everybody's getting this. And then there's a parade going through town. That parade was probably either Mardi Gras or it was St. Patrick's Day. And things like that. And, you know, and all of this is kind of like just like symbolic. And I guess trying to stop the parade was maybe like in the dream I was trying to stop a parade. It was symbolic of trying to probably stop large gatherings.
Right.
You know, and then the zombies was probably symbolic of the virus and things like that. You know, a lot of times, you know, they have dream books that you can buy, like Barnes & Noble and things, that go into, like, sometimes, like, something like an egg might be a symbol of birth or rebirth or change. Sometimes you can't take things in your dream at face value. You have to actually kind of like interpret it for the symbolism, you know?
I picked up one or two of those books because a friend of mine, I don't know why she wanted me to, someone who knows no way tells interprets dreams, or she wanted me to kind of interpret what she was dreaming and all that sort of thing. And I think one of the books that I did pick up from Barnes & Noble said, like, if you were going upstairs, that means symbolizes that at some point you're going to have good things to come. If you're going downstairs, things are going to go, in essence, go down for you, or that sort of thing.
Yeah, there's a lot of like weird, like subtle symbolism and imagery in your dreams that could mean all different kinds of things. Exactly right. And so that, you know, you might have some like really weird dream about something, and then if you look it up, like you're like, why did I dream about, you know, the sun or something like that? And then you look it up in the book, and that is symbolic of something. You know, it goes into it. I guess a lot of it has to do with. You know, like psychology and what different things mean in your mind. It's almost like a what do they call it? The Rorschach test. Like when we're all like looking at ink blots, and we all see different things in ink blots and stuff, you know. And those ink blots that we see as different things mean different things about us psychologically. A different symbolism might exist for different people too.
Right.
And, you know, it's open to interpretation. I don't think everything is symbolic exactly the same. Because then you also have to think we all come from different cultures, too. Like, my perception might be of, you know, an Italian-American person, whereas somebody from Africa might have very different symbolism that they've been brought up with. Or somebody from France, or yeah. Portugal, or Chile. You know what I'm saying? Because yep. We've all been raised, or somebody from Japan. Is going to have completely different meaning. Like if you're, I think in a lot of Asian cultures, white is a symbolic color of mourning, whereas we think of black as the color of mourning.
I think I have somebody that's on my friends list that is Native American, and she posted something in regards to an albino buffalo was just been born. I was like, I had to ask. It's like, it was, refresh my memory. Is that a good omen in the culture or bad? You know, because I guess it all depends on the tribe and, you know, so forth and so on. And I just
that's a good point. All the tribes have different cultures. There's not one Native American culture. Very good. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I'm willing, as we were talking about dreams and all that, I won't say sometimes a dream is just a dream. You're going to have, it's just like TV. Sometimes you're going to get the news, and sometimes you're just going to be entertained. Not everything is going to probably mean something.
Sometimes I think you can tell is like when I have a dream that really does mean something, sometimes it's like I can't shake it and I'm thinking about it for a long time because it just kind of like emotionally resonates for me in some way.
Right.
Whereas other times I have dreams and I'm just like, oh, that was interesting, huh? You know, and it kind of varies. And then sometimes I just have feelings, you know. Right. Like I remember I was out with my friend Edward X. Young one weekend, and I was feeling really sick, and I wasn't myself for a couple days. And then and Ed even noticed that about me. And then a couple days later, I found out someone had died at that time when I was not feeling well. Someone very close to me had died. So I was very ill at the time that person was probably dying. But I didn't realize it at the time. And that's happened to me a couple times where I've fallen ill at the same time as someone close to me was dying.
So
gone
to the point that you've trusted some of these feelings or what?
What do you mean trusted these feelings?
In regards to... Oh, I'm saying maybe something is happening with somebody else that I know, or...
Oh, yeah, yeah, for sure. But unfortunately, a lot of these things can't always be prevented because, like, a lot of the times that this has happened, the person was dying of natural causes. It's not like they were about to be hit by a train and I could have pushed them out of the way, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
You know, sometimes the person was, like, very old and they just happened to have a heart attack at the time that I was feeling ill. And, you know, and there's like a limit to what we can do to prolong somebody's life. And you know what they say? I have a wonderful book called The Power of the Saints. And they said there are three things in life that you can't change. And that's the day you were born, you know, a person's spiritual path. And the third is the day you're going to die. Everything else, maybe we can change, but not those three things. What?
To kind of be a skeptic's advocate, so to speak, what would you have to say to someone that might say that, oh, you were sick when this particular person passed away, that's just mere coincidence?
Well, I guess, but how often does something like that have to happen? I don't know, you know.
Yeah,
sure. I don't, you know. Yeah, you know, if I went into the whole circumstances of the whole thing, it would be very hard to see it as a coincidence, because there's too many things that match up, and the person was too close to me, being a parent, and all that. Right. But I don't want to go into all the specific right. details, because I don't really have anything to prove, and I don't really care that much, you know.
Again, I'm going to pull a quote from the many hosts of Coast to Coast AM. It only takes one accurate thing and one thing proven to not to be a hoax, not to be a fake, not to be to kind of validate a lot of this. Would you agree to that kind of quote?
What was the quote again?
In essence, it takes one act, meaning like it takes one accurate reading, one accurate piece of proof to prove it actually exists amongst the maybe hundreds of thousands of possible hoaxes or fakes that are out there.
I'll bring you an example of a really amazing case that happened many years ago. I think in the 1980s, there was a psychic, and they dreamt about a plane crashing, and they saw the number of the plane, you know, and they saw what airline it was, and they could see it all vividly in their dream. And you know what? This person tried to call up the airline company and warn them that the plane was going to crash. They told them what number it was, and they told them that it was going to be a TWA flight. And they did everything that they could, and in the end, the plane did crash. And all the people did die. And, you know, and that person obviously was psychic, because what's the probability that you would have a dream like that? And that it would be that accurate.
True.
And then the torture of it is because no one's going to believe you, and no one's going to stop the flight based on a dream.
And I guess the aspect is that it's on record. It's
exactly
on record. Hopefully, it's written down somewhere, or like nowadays, recorded, because a lot of things may be recorded.
Oh, I'm sure the airline company has that phone call recorded, because they, you know, most companies record all of their customer service calls.
True, especially if there's actually, oh, we have this recording, but if there's like a date and time in regards to that, saying, okay,
yeah.
If this was recorded 3 days before or 4 days
before.
Well,
I saw it on like a TV special, actually. Right. So it's like, obviously it's a documented thing that this
right.
person really did have this dream, and they really did call the airline company and try to warn everybody about what was going to happen. And it really did happen. But unfortunately, no one is going to stop a plane from taking off based on anyone's dream, you know? So that's the torture of all of the psychic stuff, is that a lot of times you cannot really prove it. Like, my uncle went to a party, and this is a true story. He went to a party, and someone was doing tea leaf readings for 8 people at the party. And she came to one of the people she was reading, looked in her cup, and she said, "I'm very sorry, but I don't see anything for you, so I can't do your reading." And my uncle said the woman died the next day.
Whoa.
And the reader didn't see a future. And my uncle said, he's like, he wondered, did she see that she was about to die and just didn't want to tell her? Or did she really just see nothing?
Right.
Who knows? Because maybe, you know, because if you can't prevent somebody's death, maybe there's no point in even telling them, really. Hard to say. But he said he really believed in that. And my uncle's actually a Catholic priest. And he said he really believes in the psychic phenomenon because he's had a lot of things in his life. I actually come from a family of people that have premonitions. My uncle, my mother, and numerous people in my family have had, my grandmother have all had a lot of dreams that have come true throughout their lives.
I'm not going to, you know, I'm not going to dive into that out of professionalism and everything else. So I will ask right now because I'm running out of questions and that sort of thing. Is there anything you would like to include or for that matter?
Would I include or for that matter? I think everybody probably to a certain degree has a psychic ability. It's more scientific than you would think because there's a lot of studies that say that we use actually less than 10% of our brain. So I would say people that are psychic or have telepathy or anything like that or clairvoyance are probably just using different parts of their brain that other people are not using, but we probably all have the capacity to use. Something that our brain, everybody's brain has the capacity to do, but they really say we only use 10% of our brain. So there's a lot of unused potential in all of us.
I will say this. I'm with the group that we do use, in essence, all of our brain, but I will say there are people that have more access to certain parts of their brain than others, or able to have more use of their brain than others.
Well, we don't use the full potential of our brains. You know, our brain probably has far more capabilities and uses than we fully have tapped into. You never know. Maybe at some point in the future, you know, we will tap into things. There's a lot of mysteries within our own human bodies that we haven't fully, you know, realized. You know,
true.
That still need to be unlocked. You know, from a medical standpoint, you know, in a lot of ways. You know, we think we know everything, but we really don't. There's still a lot of things that we have yet to discover and to explore.
Again, you know, very true. For everything we do discover or think we could explain, nature just goes, hold my beer. So.
Exactly. Yeah, true knowledge, they say, is knowing that you know nothing. You know, because for everything that you know, there's like 10 other things you don't know. So.
Okay.
There you go.
I do thank you on. Is there anything you wish, again, to promote fan pages or Twitter or Instagram or anything like that?
Well, everybody look me up on Instagram. I'm on Facebook. I'm on Twitter, GenevievaRossi.com, GenevievaRossi. I'm also on www.GenevievaRossi.com. That has a link to all my social media right there. So follow me on my Facebook fan page, my Twitter, or my Instagram.
And again, folks, we'll provide those links as well in our show description.
And please put my IMDb page, my International Movie Database. Perfect.
I'll include all that, and those links will be, again, on our main website when the show is posted, or visible on our main website, which is, again, thelongcoatmafia.podbean.com. So go there, check out those links, and follow Miss Rossi.
Welcome back, everybody. I hope you enjoyed that interview with Miss Genoveva Rossi. If you wish to join the conversation, as always, you can do so by sending us an email to longcoatmafia@gmail.com, or if you're quote unquote listening to us on YouTube, providing YouTube allows Podbean to post the episode to YouTube, you can always leave a comment down below. And if you liked the episode, please hit that like button. And while you're here on our channel listening to our show, don't forget to hit that subscribe button and check out all our archived videos from the past. And I have a bunch I have to post up for all of you. I'm just being a slacker. But you can also leave a comment on the pinned post, whatever it is, on our Facebook page. Our Facebook page is facebook.com/TheLongCoatMafiaPodcast. And while you're there, hit that like button so you could follow us. And guess what, folks? Right now, we are, as of this recording, we are at 299 likes. So if you haven't liked our Facebook page yet, hit find our Facebook page. I would say find it. Just head on over to facebook.com/ The Long Coat Mafia Podcast and hit that like button to get us over 300 likes. That's right. It's taken us this long to get over close to. Let's see if we could get over 300 likes on our Facebook page and try to hit that 500 follower goal, 500 like goal on our Facebook page, and maybe soon we'll work on our YouTube channel as well. But before we get into our social media stuff and where you can find our past episodes and how you could keep in touch with our show to make sure you get new episodes, I always should let you all know again that because of wonderful folks like Miss Rossi and Don Ramirez, who wanted to record something special this past week, and I'll kind of leave it a mystery for when it gets posted up next Monday. We have fresh content for at least with this week's episode and next week's episode, but we will go back and do our retrospective episodes with Four State Comic Con, providing someone else doesn't come to us and say, hey, we want to talk about X, Y, or Z, which I'll be more than happy to have them on to talk about that. Maybe I could twist Nick Hunt's arm a little bit to have him come on the show and talk about, because as of this recording, WrestleMania just happened, and I know I think he wants to talk about horror as well, so we'll kind of twist his arm a little bit to see if we could have him back on and talk about a little bit for one than the other. So we'll see. I gotta put that worm in Nick's ear. I'm off the next couple of days, so we'll see, folks. We'll see. We'll get more use out of that Skype if need be, and we'll get better audio. So that being said, the rest of our social media, like I said, our Facebook page is facebook.com/ The Long Coat Mafia Podcast, and we do have a Instagram page, and we do have a Twitter account, or trying to get back in the game. We're just, with this new job, being sore and everything else, we're being slackers, but we'll start to post up a little bit more in regards to everything. Our Twitter handle is Long Coat Mafia, and our Instagram handle is also Long Coat Mafia, so please head on over to those social media accounts and hit those follow buttons, and because we will be posting there, especially on Instagram, because when we go someplace, when we're finally allowed to, we will start posting stuff to Instagram and share those things with all of you. And what else? We do have, like I said, we do have a YouTube page. You have to go to YouTube and search up The Long Coat Mafia Podcast. That's the only way you could find us, because the way our name is and everything else, YouTube tends to hide us, and we only have a pathetic little subscribe, even though we love all 20 some odd of you, because YouTube thinks that number is rather pathetic. They tend to hide everything from the live stream we try to do with our brand new PS4 and everything else. So please go over there, show Facebook that you are interested in us and by hitting that subscribe button and watching our catalog until we post up new stuff, and hit that like button on the videos that you do like. We do have a bunch of stuff up there that's waiting for you to either watch or listen to. Let's see what else. We do have a Mixer.com Mixer channel, and we do have a Twitch channel. Because I now have access to both, I might be doing a little bit more in regards to everything. It's easier for me to stream fully on YouTube, Twitch, and Mixer. If I want to Twitch on stream on Facebook, because of how certain things are with
OBS. I'll let you all know which one I am streaming on, so you're able to go there to see what I am streaming. More than likely, it will be Borderlands. Eventually get back into Halo the Master Chief Collection. But still, that's another rant beside the point. Our Mixer channel is Mixer.com. Mixer.com/LCMP. Those, I think you could do either or, uppercase or lowercase. Our Twitch channel is twitch.tv/LongCoatMafiaPod or LCM Pod. Either way, the links are on our main website as always. It is, and our main website is thelongcoatmafia.podbean.com. The Long Coat Mafia is all one, in essence, all one word, and the rest is self-explanatory. While you're there, you can check out our stories there. We got a couple of photos up. I want to include Don somehow. One of these days, I want to update it to include Don and see what else needs updating in regards to links. But still, you're able to check out all our episodes going back all the way to the beginning. You're able to download them, listen to them at your leisure on the player of your choice. Or if you want to, you could stream them right there on the website. It's a great thing to do, and I do recommend bookmarking that page just in case any other outlet gets a little bit wonky, which they tend to do. So, speaking of our website, again, you're able to, again, listen to our episodes from our current all the way back to our first episode. Again, it's The Long Coat. Rent the lips, folks. I am tired as heck right now. It is thelongcoatmafia.podbean.com. And we are also available on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher Radio, and I think a few others. Those locations are on your desktop or laptop computer. But if you wish to listen to us on the go, or in this case, take us around the house, and if you don't have any wireless speakers, you're able to listen to us on, again, your mobile device by using either Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitch Radio, or a few of the other podcasting apps that are out there. But I do recommend using the Podbean app, especially if you go to our website, VIA, the internet browser on your phone. So using Podbean is usually the best way to go sometimes, just in case something like Apple Podcasts or Google Podcast decides to go wonky or change things up on you. You're able to at least make sure you're able to get our episode. Again, all the links are on our website, which is, again, thelongcoatmafia.podbean.com. And please, stay tuned for next week's episode. I'll put this out there. It is a roundtable discussion with Don Ramirez and a few other guests. So stay tuned for that, folks. I am the Reverend Godfather, and I am going to hit the sack because I am tired.
See you next time on the Long Coat Mafia.